One is understood to be in full knowledge, whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burnt up by the fire of perfect knowledge, report by Srila Prabhupada. Only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a person in Krishna consciousness, because the person in Krishna consciousness is devoid of all kinds of sense gratificatory propensities. It is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge of his constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is actually learned who has attained to such perfection of knowledge. Development of this knowledge is eternal servitorship to the Lord, is compared to fire. Such a fire, once kindled, can burn up all kinds of reaction to work. Om Jnanati Vrandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshiru Mitam Yanatasmai Shri Guru Venmaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Brahmanitananda Shri Advaita Grara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Krishna is explaining the process of knowledge we have in our modern society. So many tools for knowledge, but really no one knows what is the conclusion of knowledge, what is the function of knowledge. Generally speaking, nowadays knowledge is there for entertainment. The whole society is based on some kind of entertainment which intoxicates the mass of people. We become intoxicated and we lose sight of the purpose of human form of life. Here Krishna is saying how knowledge is meant to free one from material desire or the desire for sense gratification. And unfortunately in modern society we see the very opposite, where people are encouraged to gratify their senses. This is one means by which you stimulate society, is people get rewarded for the work that they do. But it's a lower form of training or educating society or motivating society. Like the animals, you know, the animals, you train a dog, when he jumps through the loop, you give him a cookie. Okay? So he gets stimulated and there's a reward at the end of the show. Every time he does something, he gets rewarded. So when you motivate society in such a way, there's reward. People work hard and the reward is they get access to credit. Like that, they get motivated. But the facility they get is just for more sense gratification. It doesn't promote them to a higher understanding. Vedic society was morally based. It was based on duty or shastric understanding, that you have a duty to perform. This was also Krishna's point to Arjuna, that as a kshatriya, you're duty-bound to perform your work, not to neglect it. Arjuna wanted to renounce his work and go live in the forest. But Krishna reminded him that that wasn't the proper thing to do, that he had to work, he had to do his business, he had to do his, as a kshatriya, he had to work. So everyone has to work, everyone has to do something, but the motivation behind the work should not just be for sense gratification, because sense gratification is very temporary, shreyas and prayas, very short-lived. And unfortunately, people sell their asset. We have assets, which is the time factor. We're going to live a certain amount of time in this world, in this existence. And we're trading that time for money. We're trading that time for that facility of money, that we think that this money will give me satisfaction, because with this money I can do what I want. There's this idea that I can do what I want with this money. But one becomes slave of that money because it's very short-lived. You make money, but it's very easily spent, especially in today's society. There's millions of things you can spend it on. So then you have to come back for more. And it's a slavish mentality because you get addicted to this kind of lifestyle. But because the senses are so quickly, you know, they're satisfied very quickly, but they also very quickly reject that kind of gratification, then you have to come back for more. The guy who buys a new car, he may be excited for a couple of weeks, a month, but that wears off. So then he needs something else to stimulate himself. He needs to buy something else. And there's always something like that to consume. So that kind of program or stimulus is actually considered demoniac. It's not really for the benefit of the living entity. It intoxicates the living entity. We're already, by nature, a living entity who comes to the material world, it already wants to gratify its senses. We already want to enjoy the material world. So when you set in motion a system by which people are facilitated in that way, then you know, you're just putting more fire, more fuel in the fire. It's just going to increase and increase. And that is a crazy society. So many times Prabhupada would call this democracy, crazy, demon crazy, democracy, demon crazy. Because it doesn't lead anywhere. And ultimately the time factor, which is very essential to one's life, especially in the human form of life, atato brahma vigyasa, it's meant to inquire about higher values, higher principles, spiritual life. That is taken completely away. People are no longer motivated by these principles. And another thing we see in this society is that people have their people are very concerned about their rights and their privilege, but very few people are concerned about their duty. What is my obligation as a human form of life? I have an obligation. You just, even an ordinary adult, he's responsible for the children that surrounds him. Even though you may not know these children, but these children are growing up and they're looking for ideal models, you know. So when the adults are degraded, the children become easily degraded because they're looking at the adults and, well, these people, you know, what to speak of politicians or great persons, you know, they have to be ideal citizens, but everyone has to be. But when you set in motion the goal of life as simply sense gratification, and you give the tools of privilege, you know, that I have rights and privileges, then I can do what I want. So it these things, although you can direct a society in such a way, it is very degrading in a society. While if one works on this principle of my duty, what is my duty, as Krishna was explaining again to Arjuna, that you're from an Aryan, such a great dynasty, that it doesn't befit you to be such, present such weakness of heart. You have to be, manifest a higher standard of existence. So of course, this is for sense gratification, that people are motivated for. But the ultimate work, the ultimate thing, here Krishna is not saying that one should stop working, but he should work in such a way that he burns up the reaction of his work to the fire of transcendental knowledge. Now the fire we often use in Krishna consciousness, also fire in the sense of lusty desires. In the prayer Samsara Dava Nanila Loka, we describe how the spiritual masters, like clouds that come and pour down transcendental knowledge, and that transcendental knowledge, that rain that extinguishes the burning fire of lusty desires. Here, using the term fire in a different term, that fire can also burn the lusty desires. But the same concept is there, that ultimately, either by the fire, the water extinguishing the lusty desires in the form of fire, or the fire burning those lusty desires, somehow those desires have to be extinguished. They can't be entertained. But at the same time, it doesn't say that one should stop activity. It doesn't say that one should just renounce everything and artificially give up things. So on one side, in modern society, we see people are running to fulfill their lust. And in India, you see the Mayavadis and the impersonalists, they're rejecting everything as a world of illusion. In 1880, this is not real, this is not real. So they're not motivated to do anything. Generally speaking, we're motivated to do something when we get gratification. It's very difficult to just work out of pure duty and selfishness. We're generally very selfish. Just like people who win the lottery, first thing usually they do is they quit their jobs because they don't want to work. They don't want to do this. But they're forced to do it because of attachment, sarva karma, full of desires. They work during the day and they even work at night shift, because there's so many desires to be fulfilled. Krishna is saying here that you should work, but work in such a way that gradually that fire will be extinguished. That's varnashram, or grihastha life. Grihastha life is an entanglement, but for the better cause, in the sense that person may have desires, and that is compared to fire, lusty desires within one's heart. So when there's a fire, sometimes the fire brigades will come and they'll try to extinguish that fire. But when you have a forest fire, it's a different situation. Forest fire is a big fire, and it may not be extinguished just by throwing water on it. So sometimes what do? They light another fire. Now you have two fires. But it's a controlled fire. One fire is coming from, let's say, the north, is directed towards the south. The other one is in the south going towards the north. And as they meet, there's no more combustible material, and therefore the fires are extinguished. So that is grihastha life. Grihastha life means ashram is a controlled environment by the directions of the spiritual master, the scriptures, and the sadhu. By taking guidance from them, then you can control that fire of desire. And gradually, it becomes diminished, where one comes to the stage of anaprastha, and eventually sannyas. Of course, there's another way of extinguishing fire. Sometimes when there's gas fires, you know, when they're digging for oil, sometimes the fire, the machinery ignites a fire. That's very difficult to extinguish. So what do? You bomb it. You blow it up. And then but it's very tricky operation, because you can actually blow up the whole thing. But if you're very expert, you can separate the fire from its fuel by blowing it up. Well, that's sannyas life. You blow up everything. No more social involvement. But it's a very tricky thing, because if you don't do it properly, everything can blow up. And we've seen that in our movement. You know, people who do it a little too prematurely, that the timing's not right, they just, everything blows up. So the grihastha ashram is a little bit more of a natural thing, where you work, you know, like that gradually. And therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we don't reject grihastha life. Actually, Prabhupada named this the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If you think about it, society means women. It doesn't mean men. Men means monastic life. So Prabhupada had a vision that we would live as a society, men and women. And if you work, if you have, you know, society, if you have men and women, obviously there's going to be needs and we're going to have to work. There's exception. We read about Srivas Pandit, how one time Lord Chaitanya asked him, Srivas, we come here, we do kirtans every day, and I never see you work or you know, go, you have children, you have this big place to maintain. How do you do it? No, it's okay, and everything's working out by the Lord's arrangement. But he kept insisting, no, how do you do it? So Shiva said, well, I just, you know, depend on Krishna, and somehow if after 3 days there's nothing, then I'll just jump in the Ganges. But, you know, he was such an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, even the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, will go door to door to beg on your behalf. You'll never have any needs of anything. Of course, we can't follow that as a principle, you know. Even Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Roy had an occupation. Many of the Lord Chaitanya's associates had occupation. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also was of that nature. He was going to school, and at one point he thought, if I continue with this education, I'll be a fit candidate for marriage. So then he stopped going to school. If I'm not seen as a well-educated person, no one will want to offer their daughter to me. So, but that's not, again, an example that we can follow. But we have Srila Prabhupada's example in Bhaktivinoda. They were working. But we have to be intelligent enough to not become enamored or fascinated by this society and think that this is going to do something for us. That requires intelligence, it requires association, and analytical. We have to analyze this whole process, you know, chewing the chewed, punash punar charvinat charvinanam, that we just we're not meant to just chew the chew, to just go around and spend money unnecessarily. Although we do have to make money, but we have to use it as any other tool. And in Vedic culture, or in our Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean we won't gratify senses. But sense gratification, what is described here and condemned, is a desire to lord it over. The desire to lord it over in material energy is because we're trying to imitate Krishna. And of course, we say that all the time, you know, that the conditioned soul is trying to imitate Krishna, but we see Krishna as the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. We're thinking, well, to become the supreme enjoyer or the enjoyer, I'll have to become the controller. But that's not, we cannot. We're not the controllers. And when we try to be the controllers, everything fails. We try to expand, you know, we get one thing and then the person opens a restaurant or a business, it's doing fine, and he opens another one. But before you know it, it becomes so expensive that he lives a hellish life. He can no longer enjoy what he started. He can't maintain it. So this is the tendencies we want to lord it over. And that kind of sense gratification makes us forget Krishna. While devotional gratification is a different thing, because that gratification is in service, it's seva, prasadam sevaya. We're going to honor prasadam, we're going to get some satisfaction, but it's in the mood of service. We maybe get children, but that has to be in the mood of service. We may have a wife or a husband, but it has to be in the mode of service. If we start thinking, I'm going to be the enjoyer, like Prabhupada used to say, when you get married, you're a king for a day and a slave for a lifetime. So we don't want that kind of engagement. You know, we don't want to become slaves. You know. But if we always think that whatever I'm doing, it's in relation to service to Krishna, then we don't lose sight of what our goals are. And even though we may be working, making money, whatever, and that's very difficult for common people to see. They may see Hare Krishna, oh, you guys have cars, you have this, you have that, you're eating, you're the same as us. No. The example is given just like the prisoner and the warden in prison. The prisoner, he's a prisoner, he's stuck there. Although the guards and the warden may be working in the same place, they go out at night, they go home. They're not stuck there. So a devotee may seem to be stuck in the material world just like a regular person, regular conditioned soul. But no, he's going out. Our process is to get out of this world, to get out of this prison. But we have to do it properly. Otherwise, we also become victimized by the whole propaganda. And they're very expert at all this propaganda. So how to do it, we have to simplify our existence. We have to simplify as much as possible. That's basically the only way out. If you don't simplify your life, then you're going to have to spend so much to try to keep it going. So as much as we can. And if one cannot, if he has too many material desires, then what can be done? Then he'll have to... that's also a school of hard knocks, where you go through it and you hopefully learn. And that's also... the beauty of Grihastha Ashram, that one learns through the process. But because he takes on responsibility, he learns something. Just like if you go to work and you're a responsible employee, you know, you're working and you're responsible, you get promoted. You get, you know, when there's a layoff, they'll keep you because they see this is a hard worker. The guy who's always late, the guy who's not doing, who's trying to cut corners, he gets laid off. So if we're grihasthas, we can't cut corners. Sometimes we see people trying to cut corners, and it's an ashram, the grihastha ashram, it's an ashram that should be respected, and it has its lessons, it's a process of purification. One time they were asking Prabhupada, what about the women, can't they take sannyas? Prabhupada said, no, that's not their method of purification. There's purification, but that's not their method. So, you know, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, these are different methods of purification to help us become detached from this very desire to gratify our senses. So, we keep working, we keep doing our things, but we cultivate knowledge, and real knowledge, jnana vairagya. If we really cultivate knowledge, proper knowledge, in whatever we're doing, even like I was saying, the grihastha ashram is a tangible in the sense that we may read books and sometimes we may not actually you know, it remains like a theory. But when you're actually living your life, that's a practical experience. So if you can live that and learn through your day-to-day life, then that will eventually, by that knowledge, burn up the desires for gratification. And that gratification is what binds us to the material world. Because we are trying to enjoy this world, we want to stay here. So that has to be done. And through association of the other devotees and those who are advanced, that's why sannyasis are meant to travel, to give us an example of what, that there's a possibility of becoming freed of gratification, of desires for sense gratification. There's a stage by which we, but for that to come, there has to be knowledge, detachment, and a higher taste. We have to experience something higher. It's not a question of just, often renunciation is seen as a process of giving up. But we can't give up anything. Nothing, first of all, nothing belongs to us. The other thing is that if you empty out the glass, Prabhupada sometimes would say, if you empty the glass, then anything can come in. So if you're full of Krishna consciousness, there's no ink, nothing can come in. But if you, just like if we leave this temple room, we have to walk somewhere else. We have to go outside or walk in another room. We can't just disappear. So desires are like that. It's not like you can just give them up. You have to transcend them. You have to purify them. And the only way we can purify them is by engaging them in Krishna's service. There's no other process. It's like, you know, if we shut the light, they'll be dark. So, it's either Krishna or Maya, and you can, you know, swing back and forth very easily. But there's no in-between. You know. So, in the process, we have to keep, the glass will remain full. It depends what we're ready to put inside that glass. And as we mature in our Krishna consciousness, as we become, then the desires for material enjoyment will, you know, the scale will eventually flip. It may take some time. Gradually, as we put more and more on one side, then sometimes you don't notice it. You put a little drop here, a little drop, and the scale doesn't seem to move. But all of a sudden, poof, you know, it flips. So that will take place. Bhaktivinoda in one of his bhajan, he says, one day I saw my whole house turn into Vaikuntha. Yeah. So that will also, that transcendental vision will manifest eventually. But we have to keep putting, you know, daily, whatever we can in that process. And eventually, you know, if not immediately, eventually, gradually, the scale will flip and we'll be on that transcendental platform where the material energy will not impact us anymore. We won't be influenced. The desire, the passion to run and try to embrace material energy will no longer be there. That is described to be like the seeds. When the seeds are fried, even though you plant them and you water them, they won't sprout because they've been fried. So the process of Krishna consciousness burns up, as described here, the seeds, you know, within our hearts. Just by the process itself, it burns up the desires, even the desire to even enjoy, what to speak of the enjoyment itself, but just even the desire, the motivation to want to even do it will no longer be there. And that is the beauty of Krishna consciousness, that it burns away even the desire to want to enjoy. And in this way, automatically one will be on the transcendental platform. So it's a gradual process. But it also depends on how much we involve ourselves in that process. You know, be here now. It means that we have to be conscious, Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness. We have to be conscious of what we're trying to accomplish. And it may seem a long period. You know, but I was listening to a tape the other day. Prabhupada said, if you chant Hare Krishna for 30 years, you should be a pure devotee. So he was kind of estimating, it's about right, more or less 30 years. You know, like that. So it's not a very long period, actually, if we accept what Prabhupada is saying. Of course, it depends on what platform we're doing it. You know, if we're doing a Nam Aparad, Nam Abbas, Sudanam, it depends what platform we're chanting Hare Krishna. You know, and that depends on us. We are the architect of our destiny, each one of us. So we can decide. And if we don't have such a high taste, we have to associate with those who have the taste and will develop that taste. True association. You become associated just like a husband and wife. They never knew each other. They were living, you know, happily. And then they got to know each other. And after so many years, you become so attached, you can't conceive of living without that person. I know one couple, they were married for, I don't know, 50 years or so. The wife died, the husband died 2 weeks later. He couldn't live without his wife. Mm-hmm. So that's attachment. But that's what we're meant to do with Krishna consciousness. But that's just through association. Because they were living for so long together, 50 years, they couldn't conceive of living without each other. So Prabhupada gave us that, the facility by which we can just associate. Even though we may not be into it, just through the association, eventually we'll become so attached to it that we won't be able to live without it. And we see that, many of us. We can't see that, I mean, we may know people, but our friends are really devotees. We can't really think of being with anybody else, you know, relating to, and even our, you know, I know when I go see my brother once in the blue moon, I can't really relate to him, you know. It's like a different species, practically, you know. You know, you can't really, they have legs and arms, but as soon as they talk, it's like a different world altogether. So you know your family's with devotees, the only people you can relate to, and you can't eat anywhere else but, you know, temple prasadam, you know. Even sometimes you can eat some vegetarian restaurant, but yeah, it's not very satisfying. So, you know, this is really the family that we know. We don't know anything else, and nor do we want to know anyone else or anything else. But by association, we become attached. And at the time of death, then we will simply naturally think of Krishna. We'll naturally think of the devotees, of Prabhupada, like that, just because we've been associating with that for so many years or so long. So we just have to keep working, doing our thing, but always with that idea that the whole process is to burn up whatever attachments are lingering, material illusions, enamorments, and so forth. So I'll stop here, and I'll ask if there's any questions. And if not, then we'll take the shot, I guess. Don't be shy, please. Yes, for sure. Sometimes we see people getting, you know, they're married, they're frustrated in their marriage, and then there's some separation, whatever, and they get frustrated, and there's a detachment there, you know. But that's, if you look at it, it's very short-lived, you know. I mean, within a year they're married with somebody else or something else. And very rarely do people really get detached out of frustration because, you know, it's attraction-repulsion. You know, it's just the same, just two sides of the same coin. Krishna consciousness gives us a higher taste. It's not we're rejecting grihastha life or family life because we're disgusted with it. It's just that we've moved on to something else. We've matured. It's a little bit when you're young, you know, you want to enjoy. So maybe the ladies were playing with dolls and we were playing with guns and cowboys and all that. Now we've matured to a different age. We're still looking for pleasure, but we've given up that pleasure, that kind of enjoyment, and we've moved on to a different kind of pleasure. So but the desire for pleasure is still there. But in that case, when someone gets divorced or has a bad experience, it's just frustration. But he hasn't replaced it. So the glass has become emptied. He's emptied it out. But like we were disgusted with material life. But without Prabhupada coming into our lives, we would have just gone back to the drugs and everything, because that's all you know. What else are you going to replace it with? So the hippie movement became a failure because there were individuals who could see how, you know, material society and working and all that was just a waste of time, but they didn't really have anything substantial to replace it with, so they just kind of went back, or they went back to mainstream society, you know, cut their hair and got a job and normalized their existence, but they didn't spiritualize it. So you have to have a means, and that's the spiritual master in the scriptures who gives us a higher taste. And sometimes these kind of experience may make you disgusted to the point where you're seriously going to take to Krishna consciousness, but you have to take to that. You have to replace it with something positive. Otherwise, it'll be very short-lived. Yes, please. Yeah, it's very natural. Oh, yes, sir. That's her job. That's her job. One time they told Prabhupada, Prabhupada is so, Krishna consciousness is so difficult. He said, no, your desire is weak. So that's the thing, is our desire is weak. And that's why there's Vanashram there, to deal with our insanity, you know, temporarily until we can get that higher taste for Krishna consciousness and to have that desire to purely serve the Guru. Because we're not on that transcendental platform where we can just purely always serve the Guru. You know. So, there has to be a means of doing that. Well, the first thing is that you recognize it. You say, okay, today Maya got me because I thought I was just going to go on Krishna consciousness, you know, sites, but I deviated, I went here, went there, and before note, I'm looking at some giraffes and whatever, you know, because that's how the mind goes, you know. You think at one thing, you think something, before you know it, you're all over the place. So, then you have to say, okay, I'm going to limit my time. I'm not going to spend 5 hours on this machine. Because Prabhupada, he never spent time on the internet. Actually, Prabhupada, I think I was told, answered the phone 3 times. He managed his whole movement, and he never used the phone. He would write. And he said, writing is brahminical. Although you can say, yeah, well, I'm writing on the internet. But it's somewhat different. Internet tends to be much more passionate and so forth. Anyway, I'm not saying condemning internet, but one has to look at that and say, okay, if that's the case, then I have to limit myself. I'll do it for an hour or half an hour, whatever I need to, and then I'll move on to do other things. Because yes, some people get addicted to the internet, and they're on there, all it becomes their whole life, you know. And that's what they want. I mean, the society wants people to become addicted because that's how we consume things. If we don't addict to it, then who's going to buy it? So they're very, very clever to the colors, and you know, I remember one time they were saying how they spent a fortune just on chips, how they crack, you know, when you chew, you know, how the cracking sound, you know. So it's like that. You know, the colors and the writing, it's not just happens. They market it. They look at what color, you know, is. And even if you, at least in Canada, I don't know here, but in Canada, if you buy a red car, you'll pay more insurance. Because they know red represents passion. People usually with a red car drives faster. There's more accidents with that kind of car. You know, so everything has an impact on us, and we have to be intelligent enough to see that. And therefore, you know, we have to know that these things. I mean, the internet was not created for devotees. It was created by demons, for demons. It's a tool that we can use, maybe, in Krishna consciousness. But it's a tool, you know. If you become consumed by it, then it's no longer a tool, you know. Then it's no longer useful. A tool is something you use when it's useful. But if it's something that's no longer useful, then it's not a tool. It becomes detrimental. So like also Prabhupada was giving examples, just like wine. What is wine? It's just fermented fruits. So, but because it creates a negative impact when you drink that wine, then it's bad. So everything we do, if it has a positive effect, if it's helping me my Krishna consciousness, we can use it. But if it becomes detrimental, it's because I spent 5 hours on the internet, I couldn't chant my rounds, I couldn't go to Mangalarti, I couldn't, then it becomes detrimental. Because these are the things that Prabhupada established as the means of becoming Krishna consciousness. You were pointing out, if we want to serve the Guru, these are the basic necessity. Now the rest can be icing on the cake, but if you have no cake, what's the point of the icing? Mm-hmm. So the cake is the thing. So the cake, Prabhupada had everyone vow to chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regulated principles. He didn't have us vow to read an hour a day, or to memorize, you know, verses. These were expected that it would take place. But the essential was 16 rounds and follow 4 regulated principles. So every one of us has to, and we may learn techniques, but the means of actually doing that is to value it. You know, like we value our children, so we spend time. We you know, whatever we value, we every day people get up, they go to work. Devotees get up, go to work, because we value that work, because it's going to give us the money that we need. So that's the mean. If you want to chant good rounds, you have to value what you're doing. You have to think, what am I about to do here? I'm about to chant. I'm about to have darshan of Krishna. Krishna's going to be on my tongue chanting. So there's no question of falling asleep. There's no question of not being. It's like when you go for a job interview, you don't go there sloppy, tired, you know, burping. None of these things, right? You're on your best because you're not going to get hired. So we're trying to attract Krishna by chanting. We want it. So we have to be very pukka, you know. And if we have that attitude, everything also will fall in place. But if we're not valuing what we're going to do, if we don't value it for what it is, then we'll let it go by. And that's the tragedy, you know, of the human form of life. That's the tragedy, that if we let it go by, you know. Anyway, I'm taking a lot of time here. Yes, like